Hello, Dom.
Hello, Didi. How are you doing?
All right. We're sitting here with the window wide open, so you may hear a lot of doves and can you hear them? They're making a racket, my birds here.
I can't, which is a great shame. I've got a leaf blower outside mine, so I'd prefer.
You? Leaf blower, yes. Well, there you are. You're doing the work and I'm living entirely for pleasure.
As
Not
it should be.
do you think?
I think so. I think so. Thank you so much for doing this.
Not at all.
I know you've been interviewed numerous times before, and you've been asked the same questions a billion times. So I've tried my best to avoid those,
Oh, you're very good.
because I want it to be hopefully as enjoyable for you as it is for me, or at least a fraction of it.
You can ask me anything.
Oh, thank you. Wonderful. In which case, we'll begin if you're ready.
I think I am. Okay, perfect.
Wonderful.
Okay. I'm Judy Dench, and I've had a very nice time spieling the beans with Dom Stevens. Hope you like it too. Is that any good?
Perfect. No notes. Dame Judy, thank you so much for talking to me today.
It's a pleasure.
I'd like to begin with Much Ado About Nothing.
It's very late on, Dom, in my career.
Well,
I suppose when you were a child, I suppose this is the way the conversation's going to Of course.
as much as I'm, in addition to being a director, I'm a primary school teacher.
Yes.
I've started doing with my year fours learning a Shakespeare a week. That's a lovely shocked expression for the audio listeners.
It's terrific. It's not just shocked, it's terribly pleased. How wonderful. What an advantage they'll have.
Well, I feel like there's nothing, well, there are things worse, but in this context, nothing worse than a bad Shakespearean adaptation putting you off him for decades, for life.
But people saying, oh, it's in a language I don't understand. I want to say, but if you ever want to know about love or jealousy or passion or anger or. That's where you look, and it's there. It's only your attitude to it, you know. It's so accessible for us. He says it all. He says it all in a way that we will never be able to re repeat or, no, not repeat, that's not the right word, to replicate.
Yeah, c completely. And I found these the things that got me into Shakespeare when I was a young boy was these lovely adaptations that had been written for sort of 8, 9-year-old level sort of language. But where it's meant to be funny, it's funny. And when it's meant to be spooky, it's spooky. And when it's meant to be action with swords, it's action with swords and this kind of thing. And so we've been working through Midsummer Night's Dream and then Henry V.
Yes.
After going through the adaptations, which take about 20 minutes to read, of the whole plot and the characters, who are their favourite characters? Why do they like them? What are some character traits? If their favourite character was an animal, what would they be? So Henry V was a lion cub, one of them suggested, which I really like.
Yes. Fighting for England, yes.
Yes,
Excellent.
brave and young.
Yes.
Michael Williams in the play was a horse. Of sort of
Oh.
steadfast and a
You know that my husband, Michael Williams, played Michael Williams in the film for Ken.
I'm a big fan of the film.
Well, Michael plays Michael Williams.
Was that
And that's Michael's name.
yeah was that conscious by Ken to
Oh, Ken wanted him to be in the film and then probably thought, why shouldn't he be Michael Williams? I'm
Yeah.
sorry.
Had he played Michael, had Michael Williams played Michael Williams before?
I don't think ever.
That's
I don't know even why. No, I don't think ever.
well, I'll come back to Ken in just a moment because their favourite one so far, the year fours, is Much Ado About Nothing, which is my favourite.
Oh, good.
And it was your directorial debut in 1988.
It was. I
What
loathed acting. I loathed it.
Well, there we've.
Kind of gangs up against you and goes up, and I've been part of that cast for such a long time that I loathed it. Never mind, it doesn't matter. And Ken Branagh behaved so badly as Benedict.
Also.
He, because he hiding in the arbor, he was. Did you ever see it? No, you're much too young, aren't
I
you?
didn't see it, but what I have done is found ITN archive footage of you directing it in the room.
Oh, how hopeless. That would have been terrible. Now I gave Ken, instead of in the arbor, he sat with four of those lovely kind of little, little trees around him. That was my arbor. And so that the audience could see him, but he was rather cleverly hidden. And Paddy Doyle was in the production and had to sing, whatever that is it, Tell Me Where Is Fancy Bread? I can't remember. As Ken is hiding, as Benedict is hiding, and Ken would do this thing every night. He would sit there very, very quietly during the first verse, and then he'd go, and Paddy would start again. He'd go, oh, he'd go, I'd say, will you cut that out, please? Please cut that I loathed it. I loathed directing. There we are.
Why do you loathe it? It
Because
was
I don't feel part of it all. I don't want to tell people what to do or what not to do. I like to be the person trying to get it right and being in a company. I'm no good. I'm no good. I'm not good at my own company. And so, that whole business of kind of being, well, I wasn't on my own because my godchild is Rachel Kavanagh. And so she was my assistant director. So it was wonderful having her there, but I didn't feel. I just don't like it. I like the process of having to work through something and try and get it right.
I know that jokes are a big factor of your love of acting. Is
You
that
mean behaving badly? You mean, Dom? Don't you?
you
You mean behaving badly?
knocking about?
Oh God, I can't resist it. Yes. Terrible thing, but when we did Macbeth for Trevor Nunn at the other place, the Ian McKellen, we used to the because it was so intense, because the audience was so close. I mean, they were, they were 3, 4 feet away, the audience. So the tension during it, getting ready for it, and everything was absolutely palpable. And we used to have a thing that we used to I found some orange spots, sticky spots, and I said to everyone one night, everyone has got to wear one of these, and the person who can spot where everybody's spots are on thing is the winner. God, Duncan Preston was the winner because he had his on the end of his sword. I'll never forget it. I'm not here to tell you rude jokes and how badly to behave, sorry, Dom.
It's very welcome. It's very, very welcome. Well, I'm sorry to hear you didn't enjoy much about directing, because seemingly you are very good at it. What?
Don't think I am. I also direct Look Back in Anger with Ken and Emma Thompson.
Hmm.
But I didn't, I just don't know. Well, I don't enjoy it.
How did you approach it then? How did you sort of run your room, your
Ken
other?
asked me to do it. It's only Ken has ever asked me to direct, and the two things I've directed were with Ken. I don't know. I just thought this ought to be something that I might enjoy and learn a lot from and find out a lot of, about the play. I just didn't like it. I like exploring the play and I like it with other people. I find it a bit lonely.
Did it change you as an actor, having been that side of it?
Did I get more respect for the director, do you think? No, I don't think it. No, I just thought, oh, how lovely to be back acting again, not directing.
Peter Hall, you've spoken about, directed from a lectern, and I noticed that you when you directed, you always stood up. Is that something? Did you emulate him in that? Did you? Who did you sort of?
No, it's because I'm so, well, I actually went not very long ago for to have my heart and everything tested like that. And then they said, now we'll do your height. They put me against the thing and I said, you don't have to. I'm 5'1¾". She did the thing, she said, 5 foot. Outraged. Absolutely. I said 5 1 3 quarters. No, 5 foot.
How dare she?
Dare she?
She.
How dare she? so that was probably trying to, install some kind of
Oh, sure.
thing about standing up, speaking to people. No, but yes, Peter used to stand. Well, he was such a stickler for the verse being spoken properly. And I mean, the thing of the death of Cleopatra, I'll never forget it. Never forget it. We was a whole morning doing it. He was trying to dead our royal. He was, I mean, that sounds very pedantic, but that's the way he used to start. And then it was up to you to kind of amalgamate it in how you said it. And we were a whole morning on it. And we started with dead our royal, I can't remember the line, our royal somethings. I can't remember what the line is. I've ruined the story, really. Anyway, at the end of which she said, "Thank Christ, break for lunch," she said.
Well, Emily Burns, who's just directed Measure for Measure at the RSC, speaks about Shakespeare as being inherently a foreign language that you have to translate to then begin to understand it. Do you agree with her on that?
No, because I think it removes him again from you. I think it removes him a step. He makes it, that would make him, because he's not. I mean, I understand exactly what she's saying, but if you say foreign language, then it implies it's something you simply don't understand. And the thing about Shakespeare is, you had to say to me, you'd be surprised what you understand. Because if you ever have been in love, if you ever have been angry, if you've ever been jealous, if you've ever been needy, if you've ever been alone, anything you have ever felt, he will have said. And he'll have said in a way that somehow puts it entirely in your own context.
The way I've got a sort of working theory of how perhaps Shakespeare is best performed is knowing which lines are inherently sort of throwaway ones and which ones you stress to make it sound more. If you stress everything on the beat in the sort of maybe the Peter Hall way, it's too
No, but nevertheless, Peter's where you start.
sure.
Peter is where you start. It's da 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 da. That's the very basic beginning. And when in the script, it'll the half lines are written. You'll get a half line. Then the next character's half line will start here. And then the next one, that's the completion of a line. That doesn't necessarily mean that is a pause. That can be just the completion of a line.
Yes.
I mean, what between Peter Hall and John Barton, we were so lucky. Oh, so lucky. And Michael Bentall at the Vic, crikey.
Well, speaking of the Vic, in my research and general knowledge of your career, I've noticed that we have a few points in common in that we've both started at the Vic in some way. I was part of the Old Vic Theatre Makers Company, which is
Oh,
this. Which I are you aware of it? Are you familiar with it? It's what's called theatre makers.
No, I've never heard of theatre makers.
Theatre makers. It's every year they run this program where 20 of the most promising emerging young theatre makers around the country
Do
get
they
they
mean directors?
well there it's sort of drama school for everything but acting. So it's
Oh, I see. Theatre makers. Oh, is it?
They'll have Lindsay Turner come and teach you directing, and Francesca Moody come and teach you producing, and 20 of us get sort of trained in the ways of how to be sort of master classes on how to be theatre makers, everything but acting really.
Right.
And I got to be part of that a couple of years ago, which is sort of what got me started. And of course, famously, the Old Vic is where you started with Ophelia, plucked from obscurity at 22.
from the central school.
When you
During the central, I used to go to the Vic all the time and sit in the gods for 11 pence. Where I saw John Neville and Richard Burton. And then was suddenly called after our final, we did our final performance at Wyndham's. And at that final performance was only about five people, one representative from the Vic. And then the next day I was called to see Michael Ventimore. And I saw him and did a bit of Miranda and the Tempest, which I'd done for the final show thing. And he said, "Will you learn a bit of Ophelia?" So I said, "Yes." And I went back the next day. And then he said, "Would you do that?" And he said, "Do you have long hair?" And I said, "I do." And it was folded up at the back. And I used to wear an artificial plait in with it. Have you heard this story, Dom?
I haven't heard this one, no.
Because he said, "Would you take your hair down?" I said, "Yes, of course." He said, "Just go and take it down in the wings and come back and do, oh, what a oh, noble heart, oh, noble, oh, what a noble mind is here or throne." And I did, and I took it all off and I dropped it and went in and fell down and did the speech. And he then said, "I'm going to take the most enormous risk," he said. "Now," he said, "and I'm going to cast you as Ophelia in a season." And I went away, as one would, on cl not cloud nine, but kind of cloud 19. I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. I was allowed to tell my parents, but not anybody else. But the next night, they are doing something like, I didn't know they were doing something like Richard III, and or the same night, and somebody carried in a great big tray, and my plait was in the middle of it with everything else. So I kind of feel that my artificial hair appeared at the Vic before I did.
That must have been extraordinary. And what do you remember of that first time stepping on that stage as it?
Oh, Dom. Have you got about 6 hours? Have you got?
I have all the time.
Oh gosh, oh gosh. Well, I mean, the whole, I was going to be in the mystery plays in York, which we'd all done, playing the Virgin Mary before I went to the Vic, and I wasn't allowed to tell anyone at all. Only my parents. And so that was an extraordinary experience because I was 10, 11, and David Giles and Joseph O'Connor and John Van Eysen. They won't mean much to you, I shouldn't think. But you know, I just was riveted by watching people. I just, you know, and then I was allowed to tell people, and then I went and then it was, I went to the Vic not very long ago to do a program with Ken Branagh and Tony Hopkins and all sitting, and it's in the round at the moment. Do you know that?
Yes, yeah.
So peculiar.
Reconstructed it, yeah.
So peculiar. I couldn't recognize. I was dreading going back. I thought I'm going to be so over emotional. I couldn't recognize it, but I had been back on one occasion recently with Jay Blades. I took Jay back. I did a program with Jay.
Yeah.
And when I was there, they said, the director said to me, "Would you put your name on the back of the Prosarge?" So there I am, graffitied on the back of the Prosarge. I couldn't even get there to see that because everything was, you know, different. And I've gone right off what the question was. Sorry, Don.
No, you haven't at all. It's memories of the old Vic. You couldn't be more right.
But, you know, the critics were very cross that somebody unknown was playing Ophelia. And I got very much slated, I think. But I learnt so much. And in the same season, I played Maria in Twelfth Night and The Princess of France in Henry V, and a caged rebel in the Henry Sixes. So, you know, it was continually learning, continually seeing people do. I never remember going to my dressing room after coming off. I used to come off, turn round, and watch again and again and again and again. And I'm sure that I would say to people, just watch and listen and make your own mind up about whether or not that tells you the story.
You've spoken before about how, the reviews were not overwhelmingly, unanimously positive, let's say, of your first time, mainly because you had such a little career beforehand, and it.
Nothing. I did nothing. They were very cross that somebody, a newcomer, should.
Yeah, but the director whose name escapes me, forgive me,
Michael Bentall.
Michael Bentall.
His tree is just out there.
Yes. I will cover
And
trees.
so is Johnny Stride's there.
That's
And
lovely.
Gowan is over there.
Wonderful how much of your garden is in memory of these great people and these great facets of your life.
Over 100.
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't realize it was that many.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, Michael Bento, that he stuck by you and that he recast you immediately in Henry V, was it straight after that? As
And Maria in Twelfth Night.
How did he demonstrate that support in addition to recasting, but
Well, he I was called to his room sometime on. I mean, I don't think they were all universally bad. I think they were very cross that I'd been cast, really. But we were going away to America anyway for 6 months after that. But he anyway called me to his office, and he said, he was God, such a nice man. He said, "Now look, Judy," he said, "I'm going to go on casting you," he said, "and you'll understudy lots of parts." And he said, "By that way, watching other people, and staying in the company," he said, "within the company," he said, "you'll learn." And of course, when you're surrounded by actors and you're doing different plays, you do learn that way.
Yeah, what an incredible man, incredible artist to be able to lift up other artists in that way and to make them feel safe and supported.
Wonderful.
Changing gear to another director. So you were 22 when Cast Ophelia. A 23-year-old came and saw you when you were doing a play at the National Theatre to convince you to come and play in The Cherry Orchard. How did that young, precocious 23-year-old Sam Mendes compared to the man behind the camera, directing you in Skyfall?
Oh, I'd done Sam Mendes wasn't that old. I'd done The Cherry Orchard before. I did The Cherry Orchard with Peggy Ashcroft and John Gielgud at
Yeah.
Stratford with Michel Saint-Denis. And then yes, eventually, years afterwards, Sam asked me to go and play Ranevskaya. He was, I don't know, half an hour old, I think, at the time. We've got this terrible, we've had a joke all these years, which you've probably heard. I'm sure you've heard it, Dom. But I said to him one day, he was sitting there directing us, and I said to him, Sam, I said, will you bear with me if I just try this a slightly different way? I've had a thought about it overnight, and it might work, but do you mind if I do that? And can you see me clearly, Dom? He said, "Well, you can, but it won't work." So recently, I think he was 60, I think, recently. So I had a big cushion made for him, which said, embroidered on it, "Well, you can try it, but it won't work."
Fantastic. Has his directing style changed at all between Cherry Orchard and Skyfall? Or is it very much that's the same man who directed me those decades before?
I don't know. Just he was a friend, which is so nice. I suppose he was m much more assured. And then I remember when I was killed in the church, the end of Skyfall.
Spoiler alert.
I remember him just before we shot it, he came over and said, "Actually, do so and so and so and so." He said, "Do that." I said, "Well, I'll try it, but it won't work." I said, and I kind of kept poking the game in a complete circle. So, yes, I watched him kind of in a way grow up, Sam, because he was really young when I first met him, and he's I haven't worked with him for a long, well, I haven't worked with him since Skyfall. So I expect, you know, well, he's got, you know, he's assured now, and he's done lots of very, very good stuff.
You reteamed with several of the Skyfall cast and crew on Peter and Alice with the writer John Logan and Ben Whishaw, who was Q. How does working on a new play compare with, which that was, compare with working on a pre-existing text or even a classic for you?
Same process. Same process. All the emotions are the same, but they're cooked in different restaurants. I've never thought of saying it that way before, but in actual fact, that is in a way what it is. It's so much always to do also with everybody else in the cast, you know. Unless it's a one-man show, it's not about just you. It's about you and a whole group of people in your relationship with them and theirs with you. And I don't know. I don't know. Have I answered the question? I don't know.
You have. Well, if you could clarify exactly what you mean by in different restaurants.
Well, different. Playing Shakespeare is not the same as playing Restoration comedy. Playing Shakespeare is not the same as playing Enid Bagnold or Tom Stoppard. But the structure is the same. The structure of it all is the same. And it's not. And it's important, unless it's a one-man show, to remember that it's about a group of people. It's not just about you, and it's about a group of people. And then ultimately, it's about you giving this gift or whatever to another group of people, which is the audience. And it's being true first to the author. First to the author, then to the director, then to your company, and then the audience. But it changes then after the first night, because the audience must be the most important thing.
Yeah, I've added that's a really lovely sort of breakdown, which I can already know that I'll use that in my work going forwards, if that's the order to go through. I've heard that the director is essentially the first audience member, and what you pick up is likely what they'll pick up, so how you can sort of give them the best experience of it. How does, well, actually, before we move on, what are your memories of Peter and Alice as a play?
Ben, very difficult to get to corpse. I got him the last night or the night before. Oh, that adorable person. Who played Peter Pan? Who's that singer?
Peter Pan.
Who played that boy in it? Who sang for us at Eurovision once? Oh God.
I'll Google it. I'll Google it,
Oh,
and we'll.
Sammy Williams would be screaming at me now, saying, "Oh, come on, for goodness sake." Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. He's a famous singer. And he was in it.
There we go. Hold on, I've got the cast coming up.
Yes.
I'll feed you the line, and then you feed it back, and it will.
Okay. I could do that with a lot of Shakespeare plays. I couldn't do it with any other play.
Ollie Alexander.
Yes, Ollie Alexander. Of course, Ollie Alexander. Oh, he was adorable. He was so lovely. What a good chap.
How does film acting differ for you to stage acting?
Well, there are films I have enjoyed enormously. I've enjoyed doing films with Richard Eyre, and I've enjoyed doing films with Sam. I mean, you can be in a film and never meet people in it, in the same film. And that is an anathema to me, because you just need, the whole thing of being a company is being a company and presenting something. You as a company presenting something to a room full of people. Whereas in a film, you can be. I mean, I have had great, hugely good fun on films, hugely, especially Marigold, hugely. Oh my God, my first day on Bond with Pierce. Oh, I think we were both very, very frightened. I remember that very well. And Fint coming to see me, and she walked in and saw him. I've never seen a person actually go weak at the knees, except Fint, who completely kind of almost disappeared into the ground. But I love that thing of being a company and being a company and your job is to present that thing to that group of people that night in that theatre. Whereas film, we can be having a scene, we can be having a scene, and then we might have in 3 weeks we might be doing another scene together. And there doesn't, you don't feel, I don't. Very good film actors do, but I don't. I have, yes, I have enjoyed doing films very much. I've enjoyed, I mean, I Marigold. I loved doing the Marigolds we did, and especially being in India. I just loved it. And I loved working on Iris with Richard Eyre and Jim Broadbent. I loved that too. But, there was a continuity about those. We were all out in India together. Jim and Richard Eyre and I all knew each other very well, and all our scenes were, together. And I mean, Jim and I were together and very much part of it all. And also that, what was that film about the woman who was looking for her son? Oh,
Philomena?
Philomena. Philomena, that was very exciting, and I met Philomena the night before we started filming. We had supper together. That was wonderful. So some and working, of course, with Richard Eyre and Sam Bond and Sam Mendes, and it's to do with a company. With for me, I would no more do a one-woman show than I could fly to the moon. I couldn't do any of it, all around behind the moon and back again, or whatever they're doing at the moment. Couldn't do it. I'd bore myself to smithereens.
Well, there's no, you said that like, there's no jokes. Who do you joke with in the
Yeah,
wing?
who do you share things with? You can do it for somebody. But, and they might not come round at the end. But, there's nothing, there's nobody to do it for. I don't like it.
No, you can't make yourself corpse.
No, you can. You can, Corpus. Nobody's there to share it.
That's true. How does then doing a studio sitcom like As Time Goes By work between the two? Because that sort of feels like
Oh,
somewhere
God,
between. Sorry?
so frightening.
Really?
So frightening. We did A Fine Romance before that, Mikey and I. And have you ever been at one, Don?
A recording of one?
Hmm.
Yes, I have.
You know that thing. You have to come out beforehand. And Humphrey Barclay says, and here is Michael Williams. And Mikey comes on, and you talk to the audience, And it's due direction. You come on, you talk to the audience, then you turn around, you're in a scene. And I immediately picked up five, tried to pick up five glasses of beer in one hand. I was so nervous. I mean, I couldn't do anything because there's something about, there is an invisible thing between us when we're in the theatre. Break that in order to tell the story, but it's hard to come on to me to say hello, Dom. Hello, lovely to see you, and then go up and be, I don't know, Lady Macbeth, or well, it's not quite like that with situation comedy, but there's something about it that is that I found that Mikey was a complete natural at it, completely natural, as was Geoffrey Palmer, completely natural, but not me.
You've mentioned working with Michael, and also you worked with Finty a few times on Mrs. Brown, and
Yes.
more recently in at the Donmar. What's it like working with family?
Well, it's heaven. It's heaven because I mean, the luxury of it is so lovely. You're going to work and it's you side you what is that word? You don't have to do that thing of you know the person so well, and you know that you don't have to have that extra thing of thinking what's of being extra set the extra sensory thing. You don't have to have that because you have it already. So that is heaven. I loved it. I loved working with both Mikey and Fint. Loved it. I've not worked with Sammy yet. Shame.
There's still time.
Quite.
Yes, and not counting the TikTok dances of about 6 years ago.
Oh, the TikTok, which saved me through COVID, as he probably told you. Fint sent Sammy down, and Sammy said, "Come on, Mark, he's told you this story. Come on, you've got to do this." Okay, Sam, can we do it? He said, "No. It's not good," he said. "Sam, come on." "No," he said, "you have to point." "Oh," I said, "I got it." "Any good?" He said, "No, you're not." He's a nightmare. He's a nightmare. It's worse than Sam Mendes.
He did actually, he suggested a question to ask you.
Oh, good. What did he ask?
Well, I'll use it as the part B of this following question. See if you can spot the one that Sam suggested. So one of the two parts is, how do you find a character, and how do you know when you've got a character?
Are those the two questions?
No, there's a part B coming.
Okay. Have I to answer one first?
Feel free to choose.
Okay.
I won't give you
How
directions.
to find a character, you have to read and know the play. You have to read the play because it's what you have to find out what everybody else says about you. You have to find out what influences that person to behave in the way they're behaving. And sometimes these questions are answered on the last night. I knew in Antony and Cleopatra that there was a line she had that was meant to be a laugh line. I instinctively knew. We did 100 performances of it. And on the 100th, I got the laugh.
That's
So
infuriating.
I think that. That's so exciting.
What was the line?
I can't remember. I must actually look it up at some point because I've talked about it for such a long time. And I must look it up, but I can't remember now. What was the other bit of the question, Tom?
Well, of those ones, it was, how do you find a character, and how do you know when you've got a character?
Well, you only know from the audience. The audience will tell you. The director will probably, he's the first kind of stepping stone. And his idea of the part may not be the audience's. Anyway, the audience will tell you. And, it is that thing of, it is a strange thing of instinctively knowing about laughs. You just know, and not necessarily a laugh line, but you kind of eventually think that person is saying that for a kind of other reason than just to get a laugh. That's rather obscure. It's too difficult for me to kind of
No, I'm with you.
explain. But sometimes it can change. Sometimes something can happen. The whole kind of thing suddenly changes a bit because of a reaction of an audience. Well, because the audience is entirely the most important thing anyway.
Yeah, that relationship between actor and audience.
They're the important people. They're who you're doing it for. That's why I always have the tannoy on when I'm making up. I couldn't make up without the tannoy.
So you hit what you hear the sort of bustle in the seats, and
Yeah.
so we get an ice cream if we've got time. No, that's my no, you're in row D.
Hear what they're saying, but you just hear them.
I see.
But we didn't have that at the other place when we did Macbeth. So we used to play daft games like who can throw their pants to hit the ceiling. Just laugh. I mean, we behaved so badly. But that was in order to get the froth off the beer. Because you have to present them with something very, very, very condensed and precise. And so you have to get rid of that froth. And I think that's what that was about. Mind you, had you been doing a comedy, of course, we'd all be crying and moaning and saying how ghastly life was. That's the way it happens.
Light and the shade.
Yes.
The other part of that question, and see which one you feel like Sam might have suggested, is how did you find the character of Arion, the air elemental kept prisoner by Lord Marshall in Chronicles of Riddick?
How fucking dare he? How dare he, Sam Williams? How dare he?
So personally not on par with Ophelia, we're talking as the memories of the role,
Not what?
as in your personal memories of the role of Arion, not the same level as Ophelia.
Or Juliet.
Juliet.
Or,
Old Deuteronomy.
oh, no, steady. You can be fired too. You know that I was originally cast? Did you know that?
Well, as in the original Cats, or yes, I do. Yes, because the no,
And
you finished the story.
what's her name? What was her name? What's that part's name?
What the
Yes.
who originates it? I'll go back to Google. I'll feed you the line.
Who what's her name, Claire? Who? Oh, come on.
I'm testing you today.
My God.
Of was it Old Deuteronomy?
No.
Well,
Was it Old Deuteronomy? The original production on stage of Cats
apologize. Which what was the part?
by Trevor Nunn, the lead that Elaine Page played.
Well, Elaine Page then.
Yeah, no. Pull yourself together, Tom. Of course, it wasn't Elaine Page. What was the name? What was that cat's name?
Oh, the cat! I thought you meant the actor, Grisabella.
That's it.
Yeah.
Trevor Nunn is the only person who's got a recording of me singing Midnight. Because I rehearsed it all. And then, about 12 days before we were open, meant to open, I snapped my Achilles tendon.
No.
Elaine was cast. And so I didn't get to do it.
You excited to do it?
Oh, very, very excited. And enjoyed, enjoyed it enormously, but there was no way I could do it. So,
If you'd like to give us a rendition of it, we can have the second recording.
certainly not. Certainly not. You wash your mouth out, Tom. I see why you get on well with Sammy Williams.
Well, continuing with musicals then, Sondheim. said when he was interviewed by Rufus Norris, who was the previous guest on the show, actually. I remember seeing, this is what I'm saying, I remember seeing Judi Dench do Send in the Clowns, and I thought, I've never heard that song before. It moved me in a way I've never been moved by that song before.
Where that was?
Sorry?
Do you know where that was?
The interview or the performance?
Oh, unless of course it was in the show. Yes, yes, because I did the show. I did the thing at the
A Little Night Music.
yes, in Little Night Music. But I also had to sing it at the Albert Hall, and he was sitting about 8 rows back. I was so frightened. That was after we'd done it. It was for a tribute to him, I think. Yeah.
The Cameron Mackintosh, was it the Old Friends? Was it that one?
He was what?
Was it the Cameron? Didn't Cameron Mackintosh do a sort of Old Friends Sondheim sort of?
Oh, yes. Was it that at the Albert Hall? I think it was. It might have been.
If
Might
not,
have been. Yes.
what do you
God.
like about Sondheim?
Oh, well, we got to know him really well. And you kind of knew where you were with him. You knew where you know. He was a complex person. Did you know him? No, don't. You
No,
didn't.
I didn't.
Too young. But he was a complex man. And the first time I ever met him, I'd done cabaret for Hal Prince, and Hal asked Sammy, no, Sammy, Mikey and Fint and I to go. They were on holiday in Mallorca in a beautiful house right up on the top of a hill. And we arrived, the three of us. Fint was a little girl. And we came in, and Hal and Judy Prince came to meet us. We had a great hug, and they said, "The others are all in the pool. Come up." And we went up, and he said, "There's I don't I can't remember now. Oh, Mikey, why aren't you here?" Anyway, he said, "There's so and so, so and so. There's Stephen. There's so and so, so and so, so and so." We all said, "Hello, hello." And we went, "Got out." And Mikey said to me, "You know Stephen? It ain't Stephen Sondheim." It was, and it was. That's when I think I first met Stephen. I think, unless I got that story wrong. Oh, I think it was. But we had such a wonderful time. I loved doing Little Night Music. I loved it.
When you say he was a complex man, what do you mean exactly?
Well, he was quite prickly because Larry Guitard, we were in Little Night Music together. And he knew Stephen really well. And when Stephen arrived and we were all there, he didn't really greet. You know, you'd think that somebody would go up, knew somebody well, go up and say and really give them wonderful welcome. But he kind of, I wouldn't have believed he'd ever met him before. Larry knew him really well. And then when we were there, Mikey and Fint and I were in New York. He invited us to Turtle Bay at his house. And we went there. We had an evening with him. He was absolutely charming. He was lovely, but he was kind of Stephen. I would say that I don't know that he was ever happy in his life. I'm not. I may not be right about that at all. He was a complex, complex person, but I was very, very fond of him. I've got a tree to him too. There's one to him and one to Hal, opposite each other.
In Cabaret, I spoke to Amy Lou Wood, who's just performed it recently, a couple of years ago, in the sort of reimagining of it, And she said it was very sort of emotionally and mentally taxing to play the role of Sally Bowles. Was that your experience too?
Oh, just hard. Crikey. So hard. And the night, sometime after I was at the Vic, but the night Johnny Neville and his wife Caroline came, I completely dried in the middle of a song. I was so frightened. it was absolutely thrilling. And Hal said to me, just have Goodbye to Berlin next to you on your dressing table, open. And that's what I did. And so I had it referenced, that she was this English woman, girl, English girl, who had no experience whatsoever and couldn't sing properly. And I used to just read that all the time.
Passage every time.
Because she's not meant to be a belter, she's not meant to know about what it's like, actually.
Yeah, completely. And often it's when you have a sort of when there've been productions where they've been had a really great singer,
That's not what it's quite about.
yeah. What did you do when you dry in a song? What do you do?
When you dry in a song, oh, will you say some rubbish like you do on stage? You come up with some rubbish or some word that nobody's ever heard of, least of all you. With Shakespeare, it's not so bad because you know the meter. It's got to be a two-syllable word or one. That mercy is not strained. Mind you, the audience don't notice. The audience very rarely notice. Much worse for the actor, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. I remember you mentioned before. I forget which actor it was, but they dried in the middle of a iambic pentameter and sort of went, my liege, to bridge that gap.
You put one more beat in the line, then.
That was a test.
You said, da 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 da, my lead. No.
Oh, sorry, I'll go again. Da 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 my liege. No, that's not right.
No.
Was it? Da 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 da.
Da 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 da.
How many? Hold on. Da
No. No, but I'll tell you a very interesting thing
Please do.
that I learnt, well, learnt from Peter Hall. When it says those half lines, then they're there because if it's written there, that one is the end of that line. And that one can be on its own. That means that there is a slight pause there.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. So the span of it,
No, it's not. Yes.
the span of it will be
Now, as I ascended, that thing. I'll speak when, now, as I ascended. Yes, it is the rest of the line. It doesn't mean it's when it's a short line on its own that isn't completed. That is where there is a reaction.
Yes.
See what I mean? I'd have to do it with a book, and now I can't see.
Well, I mean, the pantheon you have memorized. Have you got? I'm familiar with how many sonnets you have, but are there sort of monologues as well in there? Like, is Beatrice still in?
Is there a what?
Is Beatrice still in your mind? Have you still got Beatrice's?
A sonnet. Oh yes, I'm going to get Sue to write me another. I have to have them written so large now, but there's another. I must learn another. I must learn another in the next few weeks. Yes.
I remember you saying how, because you've done, was it Dream, you've done five times.
Dream, the Vic, First Fairy, the Vic, Hermia, Stratford, Titania, the film Titania, four times.
Four times. But that's the one that you could probably do.
I could do the whole of the completely drying on the thing. These are the forgeries of jealousy.
Can I be cheeky and ask you do a little bit of it.
Yes. These are the forgeries of jealousy. And never since the middle summer spring met we on hill in dale, forest, or mead, by paved fountain or by rushy brook, or on the beach in margent of the sea, to dance our ringlets to the whistling wind. But with thy brawls thou hast disturbed our sport. Therefore the winds piping to us in vain, as in revenge, have sucked up from the sea contagious fogs, which falling in the land have every pelting river made so proud that they have overborne their continents. The ox hath therefore stretched his yoke in vain, the ploughman lost his sweat, and the green corn hath rotted ere his youth attained a beard. The fold stands empty in the drowned field, and crows are fatted with Murrian flock. The nine men's morris is filled up with mud, and the quaint mazes in the wanton green, for lack of tread, are indistinguishable. The human mortals want their winter cheer. No night is now with hymn or carol blessed. Therefore the moon, the governess of floods, pale in her anger, washes all the air that rheumatic diseases do abound. And thorough this distemperature we see the seasons alter. Hoary-headed frosts fall in the fresh lap of the crimson rose, and on old Chaim's thin and icy crown, an odorous chaplet of sweet summer buds is as in mockery set. The spring, the summer, the childing autumn, angry winter, change their wonted liveries, and the mazed world by their increase now knows not which is which. I'm not going to do any more.
Well,
Can't
thank
not. She said, "This is all our fault." Obers, says.
Thank you. That's so. Yes, it made me a little emotional watching that. That's so sort of beautiful. Is Midsummer Night's Dream your favorite of them all?
No,
Which one?
I like Macbeth a lot. I love that play. I love that play.
Why?
And I just love it. I think. I also think it's interesting that she is the villainess of the piece. Because if you look at the first scene, he doesn't behave that badly. You see the witches, what he says, examine what he says. But then, first entrance, she comes reading the letter and about they met me in the day of success and all that. And then she goes on to say, Glamis thou art. And Cawdor, and shalt be what thou art promised. And then she says, yet do I fear thy nature. So she's the villainess of the piece, I think. And he, of course, naturally comes back and says, yes, you're absolutely right, but nevertheless, well, if he'd not been married to her, he might not have done it, and we wouldn't have had a play.
It would have been a lot more dull a show.
It would have been really dull, wouldn't it?
Just some,
It would have been dull.
just a bloke in
He'd
Scotland.
come back and she'd have said, no, we're not going to do that. We're...
Just a comfortable middle manager
Why?
in Dumfries.
Why? Nobody would have thrown their pants in the air or anything.
Which is always a great marker of a Shakespearean text is how high the pants can get.
Yes, quite. Yes, and it couldn't be very high because it was rather low ceiling.
Well, that's to your benefit. One third sort of connecting thread that we have is in my very limited acting career, but when I was seven, I was in a short film with Sir John Mills. It was the last film he ever made.
Oh.
That was filmed by Jack Cardiff, who also did African Queen and may well have collaborated with you. But you were with Sir John in Good Companions, the last role you had to ever audition for. What are your memories of that time?
Oh, they were simply wonderful. He used to come in his wonderful car in The Good Companions. And he after he we'd done it, he said to me, "I've asked." And he said, "I'm having that car, the prop car that was that the sports car." He said, it's been brought to the garden." Because he said, "I've said things to you in that car I have never said to another human being." We used to talk about absolutely everything. Gosh, what a good friend. What a
But it,
sweet man.
yeah, from knowing him as a sort of, a day together in Pinewood as a 7-year-old, I got the impression of, I know, I had no idea of Ice Cold and Alex. I had no I knew any of these things, but I was struck by, you seem really lovely and friendly and really good at this, and people seem to respect you. So clearly that's sort of innate in his bones.
Through and through, like a piece of rock.
Yes, I'm very tempted to pry into what he said to you in that car.
Everything. We talked about everything. Everything you could think of, we talked about. You could come to him and say, "Oh, I've had a lousy day," or you could talk to him about love affairs and anything. Gosh, special man.
Does he have a tree? Does he have a tree?
He must.
I would assume so.
Sue, does Johnny Mills have a tree? Ooh, I'll have to look at the list. Bear with, bear with. What a terrible thing. If he hasn't, he will have in a few days. Do you know, I don't think he has a tree. And in my mind, he's not dead, you see, that's why.
Sure.
I don't think he has. The thing is, it's not in alphabetical order.
Oh, is it in chronological
There
order?
we go.
No,
So,
it is in
oh, it is
alphabetical
in
order.
alphabetical order. I cannot believe that.
John Miller, but not John Mills.
Good grief. Well, it's a good thing that we had this conversation.
I'm
Well,
very
it will be at the end of this week.
Excellent.
Buy one later today. Oh, well, also, Dom, do you live in London?
I do, yeah.
Well, also, come down, get Sammy to bring you down.
Oh, I'd love that.
Come down, you can see them all, and it would be nice.
I'd love that. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. What a terrible thing.
Well, maybe I can come down for when you plant it, perhaps.
I will plant it, and I'll get Sammy will liaise with you when's good for you both.
It's lovely. Well, that's such a sort of, given that's come about because I was in a film with him age 7, 22 years ago, and through twists of life we're now having this conversation, and that's such a sort of, it's akin to the Sam Mendes, you can try, but it wouldn't work.
Yes, it is.
Decades later.
It's very, very nice. And Sam is in with it, and Vint. It's very good. That's very good.
It brings me to, I've three written questions down, and then I'll let you get on with your day.
Again.
One of them is very related to this because it's on, because I know about your love affair of nature and a love affair of trees and the forest you have growing in your garden, and it's on a very it's a personal note, and I you'll indulge me on it, but my grandmother has always shared a similarity with you in mannerism, in voice, and I've always sort of seen you two alike. She passed away in October, and this Easter weekend. I went back home to my mum. It was me and my grandmother throughout my childhood, and we put some of Nana's ashes in with a rose. And mum, knowing that this was coming up, In part, there is, long story short, there is a breed of rose called the Judi Dench.
There is.
And it is that rose that my grandmother is now part of.
Oh, Dom, I'm very pleased. Oh, I'm so pleased. It's actually very, very pretty colour. It's a very pretty colour. Oh, that's lovely. What a good link.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for being such a sort of incredible presence through so many people's lives in this wonderful web of things.
No, thank you for reminding me about Johnny Mills. And now we have a link that way too. Oh, it's going all ways, you see.
Absolutely. It's all part of the Douglas Adams, the holistic detective. Everything is connected in
That's right.
the world.
That's right.
Yes, two questions. One I always end with, and then but an additional one specifically for you, which is why do we need Shakespeare?
Because we can't do without him.
Good, moving on.
Because he's entirely the rhythm, he's entirely a rhythm that is inside you. And because there is nothing, no emotion that I don't think there is a single emotion that any of us experience that he hasn't written about and has understood about.
I lied a moment ago. I have actually two more questions. I forgot one of them. The other, the penultimate one is, what makes a great play?
For whom? An audience, you could do wonderful play and an audience could go, oh, well, I don't like that, all in rhyme or whatever they say. What makes a great play for an actor that there's something to discover and examine and have to climb? It's a big climbing wall. For an audience, maybe an answer to something that they are unconscious of, that they're asking themselves, or that they suddenly realize something for the first time about something they've never understood. Not too long, I expect. Quite. All those things. Have I answered it?
You have. Thank you. And my final question is, why do we need stories?
Well, we need stories because our imaginations aren't enough. We need stimulus. We need to be stimulated. We need to think about things that don't apply to us. We need to think about things that affect other people. And we perhaps meet the people. And therefore you learn about something. And so surprisingly, you often learn about something, and it is exactly what you need to hear. For some extraordinary, you can see something in a play and suddenly think, oh, that's right. You have to be told stories in order to stimulate your imagination. Because let the imagination get, it needs feeding.
Dame Judy, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, Don, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And we're going to write down about the trees, and I'm going to do something about it. So organise with Sammy when you want to come down.
I will do. Thank you.
Okay, Don. Look forward to seeing you.
Yes, likewise. Thank you so much for today. And I really look forward to seeing the tree.
Yes, we'll oh yeah, I'll get it in. And I get one to your grandmother at the same time. So they'll be there.
Well, that is
That's what we do.
thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.